This is Twa Teams One Street from the Evening Telegraph, the only podcast as obsessed with Dundee and Dundee United as you are. This week, pitch problems pour down on D. And can United rocket after Raith Rovers result? Hello and welcome to this week's edition of Twa Teams One Street. I'm Tom Duthie and podcasting alongside me this week with hot news is George Cran.
Hello.
Alan Temple.
Morning.
And Craig Cairns.
Hello.
George, I've been waiting ages to start this recording. Costa's breaking news.
It's all stuff happening with Dundee.
Are you going to Dens on Saturday, George?
We're not sure. That's the thing.
Explain.
Well, if you haven't noticed already, there's a bit of a problem with the pitch.
No.
This season. And obviously, a lot of rain on Wednesday wasn't a good day for the pitch. And there's a possibility that the league will force Dundee to make sure the game is played somewhere.
The bullies.
Because we're coming up to the split and you can't really fit any more games in. So get it played somewhere, please. Oh, I don't think they said please. So from my understanding at Dundee, they're doing all they can to try and get the game at Dens Park, because obviously that makes much more sense than anything else. But if the pitch, yeah.
So
they've got covers and they're doing everything possible that they can, but there's more rain forecast between now and the game.
Because it's been raining since October.
I know. It's supposed to be April. It's only supposed to be showers these days. But no. And it has been an ongoing thing all season. We've said it a few times before Dundee home matches, even at the start of the season, that somehow it just seems to... The heavens open a couple of days beforehand and the pitch isn't able to handle it anymore.
I mean, it's football, so the last people will... Everyone concerned will think about it's probably the fans. But is there a time scale to this, or are they just going to have a fleet of buses outside Dens at 2 o'clock on Saturday and say, sorry, everybody get up?
Yeah, there will be a time scale, because obviously there are big logistics that will have to be sorted out if the game is getting moved to a different venue.
I would suspect by the time people have listened to this, possibly, the situation will probably have moved in some direction.
Because you could potentially have a different area that's going to police it, you know what I mean, a different police force and all that kind of, and exactly, all the emergency services that you need to have in place. And so it's not just a matter of getting the players and the officials and the fans there, it's all those other things that you can't just do at a drop of a hat.
So football matches are large events fundamentally. Exactly. They are big police, you know, police security events, so all that needs to be
Because Dundee are having an unusually successful season in the Premier League. Usually by this time of the year they're quite small events.
I think even when Dundee are rubbish, they still need to be policed.
You actually, to mention the police is a valid point, because I would imagine whether it's, I mean, where else can they play at? Perth, Edinburgh,
across the road.
Across the road would be the easiest one, because the police know that they've got a game to within 50, 60 yards.
If you take away every single aspect of optics and fandom, then absolutely it's the one that makes sense. It would be an interesting conversation to earwiggy on. At this time, as we speak, no such conversation has been had with Dundee United. I can say that definitively. But by the time you hear this, I would be exceptionally surprised. But this is Scottish football, so stranger things have happened.
I have to say, I have covered a Dundee home game at Tannadice in the Premier League. They drew with Rangers 20 odd years ago, round about the turn of the millennium.
It was the new stand.
But that was planned. That was well planned in advance.
And the Tannadice pitch is looking great, ironically being upkept by the man who played Dundee's next groundsman. But the pitch looks great.
And it is available, but it does occur to me, it's one of these things where it's, and I totally get where the league are coming from. I'm not particularly having a go at the league, but they need to realise, well, an authority like the police might say, oh, well, we need to know where this game is now. And like I say, which makes Tannadice the ideal option, because if it's somewhere else, the police might have to move officers from this area
But the other clubs have to be amenable to this. This is the challenge. This is what this is what why these conversations are going to be so interesting, because this is a crucial point in the season for a lot of football clubs, and a lot of them will...
Would they just say yes? That's the thing.
Well, but, you know, you've got the upkeep of a pitch. Exactly. That's your home ground. You want it to be spick and span for the next time you're on that pitch.
Exactly.
You, would you say no to an extra 7 days of rest for your surface just so that you can do Dundee a favour? Why?
I know. Well, you'd think St Johnstone might be an option because they're away from home. They're at Hibs, and Dundee would quite like them to win that match, to be fair. but last week, the pitch at McDermott, I mean, it wasn't as bad as the Dens Park pitch, but it was cutting up, and it wasn't perfect. Mm-hmm. They've had a wee bit of trouble. Yeah.
Saints are battling for survival. They don't want they don't want a decent pitch for the rest of the season.
Exactly.
And how far do you go? I mean, there's the question as well. If Dundee United don't, you know, I don't even know what Dundee United's thought process would be. Maybe they would think it would be quite a funny flex to host the game
after a lot of money.
Yeah, and like the it would. You know,
well, I have to say, remembering back all these years, when, as I say, it was a well-planned operation to move to Tannadice for a game. My recollection is the United fans found it funny. The Dundee fans weren't as happy.
Yes, about it. And I'm sure there would be an element of that as well, because I'm sure Dundee United fans would find it quite amusing that Dundee can't get a game on, and 100 yards across the road, the game is on. That would be a sharp juxtaposition that wouldn't paint Dens Park in the best of light. But likewise, I mean, are Dundee going to do that? The optics from a Dundee perspective are bad. Then you, like you say, you go to St Johnstone. If St Johnstone are worried about the state of their pitch, I mean, how far down are you getting? Both Fife clubs, the biggest Fife clubs, are at home on Saturday. You're getting further down the coast. You need the, we were discussing this before recording, you need the requisite safety certificates to host a Premiership football match as well. So you can't just, you know, pop into a ground that might be just big enough in a lower league. So you're very swiftly getting down the coast to Edinburgh before, you know,
or up to Aberdeen.
Up to Aberdeen.
We're talking about this. Fascinating. I have to admit, I don't know if even if you've got like Satana Rice, and there'll be a few other grounds that are up to Premier League standard, but I don't know if they have a Premier League, if there's a sort of a difference in the local authority. Safety certificate is made on the grounds of the Championship doesn't need quite as much as the Premier League, and then you've got sort of those kind of problems. I don't know. I've been in on this kind of situation before. I once flew to Greece with Dundee United.
I don't think they're going that far.
And when we took off, we didn't know if there was going to be a game. We didn't know where the game was going to be played, and there was a chance that we were going to arrive in Athens and be bussed 5 hours away because AEK Athens, as they're actually called, because they're not AEK Athens. But they had relayed their pitch at the Olympic Stadium in Athens in the summer, played their first league game on the Sunday before they were due to play United in the UEFA Cup, Europa, I think it was still the UEFA Cup back then, and the pitch disintegrated during the game. They moved it to another stadium in Athens, and the home fans of that club, it wasn't one of the big clubs, home fans in that club climbed over the wall, which was only waist high when we saw the picture, dug the pitch up so that Ike couldn't play there. And in the end, under a police escort, we were taken to Olympiakos' ground at the port of Athens. There was 500 police, 200 of them armed, on duty, because they thought the Olympiakos fans would riot. We got to the stadium. No AEK fans were allowed. That's the top five clubs in Greece to explain don't take away fans when they play each other, because they're always reckoned at away end. Got there was all these police, they're all standing about smoking fags, because there was not us. There was the only fans at that game were United fans. There was no Ike fans there trying to get in. There was no Olympiakos fans protesting. There was just a lot of bored policemen who were happy with the overtime, but they were standing about doing nothing. So
the moral of the story is it could be worse.
It could be worse.
I thought you were going to say that St Johnstone fans will get the tractors out to wreck McDermott Park.
Oh, you'll get a call for that one.
You'll not be allowed on Talking Football again, mate.
The only thing you hope is that by the time you're listening to this, as you eat your tea tonight, you've got an idea what's happening. You would hope by, this is Thursday, you'd hope by tomorrow morning at the latest, yeah, fans would know what they've got to do.
I think there needs to be clarity on whether, and I think it's clearly veering towards off. And you need to know whether the game is taking place at Dens Park.
The pitch will get checked today.
Yeah. That needs to be done straight away, and then it's going to be a busy day of calls,
but
I would suspect.
But the league are quite within their rights to look at the weather forecast. I mean, I'm a hard man, George. You know that from working with me. I must admit, even though it's my beloved Dundee, if I was the league, and if the weather forecast is as it was first thing this morning, I'd say to Dundee, no, you'll need to move this, because there's a better than even chance this game is going to be off. Because basically the last cancellation against the Rangers game, which also, if they play this weekend, does that affect the pitch for the rearranged Rangers game?
And you can guarantee
it was overnight
SPFL
it happened.
Panicking about that one
as
well.
Yeah. If I'm them, I would be saying to Dundee, no, the weather forecast is such that given your last game that was postponed on the strength of overnight rain, you have to move this. And if it's dry for the next 2 days, tough luck. The pitch is your responsibility. It's a costly one for Dundee.
Yeah, I think it will be. And the call-offs of this season have already cost them money as well. I think the added thing in it is that these games obviously mean quite a lot in terms of the way the league's going to end up, because the split is next Saturday. And Dundee are right in, well, they're sixth at the moment, and could finish either side of that line. They could.
Yeah, I bet.
If they win the game against...
I can bet your life one team that won't object to the game being moved are Hibs. Main rivals for the top six. I'm delighted that Dundee are going to have to face a home game from Dens.
So would you rather they get forced to play on a muddy pitch? I don't know. And obviously Rangers are involved at the top end of the table on Wednesday, so they don't want that messing things up.
What are the fixtures this year? Because it does occur to me, and it's the nightmare scenario in a lot of ways for Dundee fans, but if I have not yet checked the other teams, because only Dundee and Dundee United exist in my world. But if Kilmarnock or Livingston are away from home, they're the two synthetic pitches that you're almost guaranteed you'll get a game.
Livy or Glen Aberdeen.
Imagine asking.
It'd be Livy on Sunday.
Teach them, not the fans, the club.
This comes the same week that the fans are being asked to fork out more for their season ticket next season as well. I mean, they couldn't have timed that any worse, really, given that what's unfolded in the few days afterwards.
I know, obviously hindsight and all that, but yeah, you're right. It's been a...
You know what, in a funny way, it might not be a huge problem for many fans, because it was a holiday weekend last weekend. A lot of punters won't have the money to fork out travel expenses and stuff like that. So, I mean, it's very annoying for them, but I mean, in practical terms, they might just have to say, well, there's no issue here. How do you hire a bus, for instance, at that short notice? You're really talking... scheduled transport.
In this sort of myriad of problems, the midweek game coming up is a real nuisance as well, because it kind of, you know, when you're talking about the competitive importance of the situation Dundee are in, it kind of takes away your scope to potentially play a game on a Sunday, because that would not be a good situation either for Dundee to have a day's less preparation for a match against Rangers. Rangers have the Old Firm game on Sunday, so it's they also have a Sunday game, but you want any advantage you possibly can have when you're playing against a team like Rangers, and that extra day is probably something Tony Docherty has factored into his preparations and the lead up to game. So that even takes away that we're talking about, you know, teams that have synthetic pitches that are potentially, even if they're at home on the Saturday, they could host the game on the Sunday.
That's what I mean, Livy. I think Livy's Sunday might be.
It's no great, is it?
Nothing's great. That's the problem.
Looking further away, ahead and continuing as my cold, callous self, if I'm Rangers, I'm picking up the phone to the SPFL and saying, well, what's the forecast into next week?
Rangers might have bigger fish to fry.
Yeah, Rangers. This weekend. Dundee, there might be a blessing for Dundee that Rangers are thinking about the Old Firm game. But if I'm Rangers, I would turn around and say, we've got a pitch that will be ready again by Wednesday next week. we'll designate it as Dundee's home game. Again, I was at a Scottish Cup semi-final when Dundee United beat Rangers at Ibrox, and it was designated as a neutral venue because Hampden wasn't available. Neither was Parkhead.
Yeah.
Now, it's one of these things. Clubs have got to look after themselves. And I must admit, if I was in the Rangers boardroom just now, I would be on a member of the administration staff at my club saying, get on to the SFA and say, we want to know where we're playing next Wednesday. And
also, not long ago since they travelled up for a game that didn't take place at Dens. I mean, I know some of the messaging from Rangers after that was a bit confusing stuff. They were saying that they didn't know anything about it, but their official Twitter account was tweeting about it at 8 a.m. or something like that.
Yeah.
But still,
it was much
worse
for their fans. I mean,
they have that in their argument, if you see what I mean, that they don't want to be in the situation where they're travelling up for a game that could be in doubt.
It must have been a nightmare for Philip Clement in his 5-star hotel in Fife on the Saturday night. It must have been such a hardship.
Yeah, exactly. I'm reluctant to take their side too much.
His fans are getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning to travel a game that didn't take place. Yeah. I think they're the ones that suffered most in that score. But it's one of these things.
I think on that front, you're saying possibly changing, switching around playing at Ibrox basically on Wednesday. I think the SPFL would probably take Celtic's feelings of that into account.
Yeah,
for
once I have some sympathy for the authorities because it is the nightmare scenario. But again, just going by that logic that clubs are there to look after themselves first and foremost.
Mm-hmm.
I would, if I was Rangers, be saying, we want to know where Wednesday's game is. They've got a right to say that.
Also right in saying that whenever one of the Old Firm getting involved, the goalposts sort of change a bit. Like, for instance, when post-split, you never get Rangers going to Celtic Park 3 times a season or anything like that.
Yeah.
So there's always things done. They always avoid a title decider. So when one of them are involved and there's a tight title race, then yes, the conversation does change a little bit.
Would you like some live right of reply from our friends at Dens Park?
All right.
Statement out. Wish to respond to media speculation regarding the club being forced to move Saturday's match against Motherwell away from the Scott Foam Stadium. The club want to clarify the situation regarding this. There's been heavy rainfall in the Dundee area since the start of the week. The club have had full grounds teams along with consultants working on the pitch since the postponement of the Rangers match along with associated machinery, yada yada. Rain covers will then be put down covering the whole pitch. The club are doing absolutely everything in its power to get Saturday's match on and is expecting Saturday's match to go ahead as planned, but the club are in regular discussions with the league. No decision to move the match away from the Scott Foam Stadium has been made, and the stories circulating in the media are very much speculation. The club will provide another update to supporters later on. However, I would clarify on, since they're discussing media speculation, at no point do they say that moving the game would not be an outcome if the match can't go ahead, which is what the stories say. So there's nothing there that actually says that the stories are inaccurate, which they aren't.
I have to say, while I totally understand Dundee's statement, and I would, if I was within Dens Park, not likely, I would probably release similar. But the bottom line is, because of what's happened to their pitch this season, it's not really down to them.
And the issue is, it's time. We've discussed it several times at this section. The decision needs to be made quick. You can't go, you know, near the knuckle on this one and say, do you know what, we'll make a decision at 9 a.m. on Saturday morning. It's too late. If the game's off, then you're gubbed. So it's...
Unless you're just looking for a bit of grass to play the game on and not have any fans or anything, and just like officially play out 90 minutes, then yeah, you have to make a decision by the end of this working day,
so
imagine.
It's so bold. Like, if they decide to go, do you know what, let's just stick covers down and hope for the best, and it doesn't pan out, the league are going to be... I don't think the league will look kindly upon it.
No. We don't know how big these covers are, though. I mean, it could be just across the stands.
God knows.
No, obviously, yeah. There's
interesting, though, the phrase, the expectation that they expect the game to go ahead is certainly an interesting one.
Has anyone checked that the covers are waterproof?
I hope so.
It's another problem you have. I mean, ideally, and I would be surprised if this was the case. Ideally, you have covers that you can raise in the middle, but that takes a bit of, I've seen them before, but that takes a bit of planning. That is not the kind of thing that you come up with at this short notice, but because you do have the problem with just laying covers, that then you've got to be very careful to get the water away.
I mean, forgive me for being dense, but have these covers not been there?
No, it's not their covers.
Have they not? They've got them in?
Yeah, they've got them in for this week to try and sort things out, obviously.
And of course,
it does. I mean, they're obviously, as we've discussed, all the problems of moving a game. The ideal situation is getting on at the end, so they'll be doing every single thing they can do.
And George, stop now. I've got a pun. It never rains but it pours. This is the kind of thing that always happens when the boss is in town, doesn't it? Tim Keyes is making one of his rare visits. The fact he makes rare visits is in no way a criticism, because he puts the money in and that's what's most important. But it must be a nightmare for some of the staff at Dens that the man with most of the shares is in Dundee at this moment in time.
Yeah. They did win a game, though, with them there, which helps.
Yeah. But a fan got hit by a flare. You say, it never rains, but it pours.
I know, it's been some week in terms of Dundee, obviously, with the... Tim Keyes in town, and
he's entitled to curse his luck, because it's been a great season on the whole. It's been a fantastic season, and he's come and something's hit the fan that I'm not allowed to say.
It's George that I feel sorry for.
No, George never hit the fan.
I texted him last night about something about 8 o'clock or so, and he's just the sort of like the sad, I've only just shut the laptop.
I'm not doing any more work.
Alan Tibble, you're far too experienced in journalism to express pity for a fellow journalist, because you know every single punter is screaming just now or throwing things at their YouTube screen.
I never close my laptop.
It's got to pay, and that's true. Fans, I feel sorry for you.
But yeah, there's a few things to cover, I guess. Obviously, Tim Key's been here, but the unfortunate...
Has he met Tony Docherty?
I'm not sure.
Tony Docherty said yesterday, no, he hadn't, but he would in the coming days.
Surely it's the shortest meeting.
He said he waved to him when he came out at the game the other day, but...
Surely they sit down together, because Tony Docherty and him are to discuss the budget for next season.
Yeah,
Tony puts his hand out and says, more of the same. Tim slaps a wad of dollars in that open palm and says, more of the same, please, Tony.
Have you been in these conversations before? Sounds good.
Yeah, that's how I used to discuss my wages with the editor, and that's why I never got a pair of...
You're slapping the face.
I got slapped in the face a few times.
He's here for a couple of weeks, so there will be time, obviously, for him to speak to everybody, I suppose, at the club. From my understanding, they've been speaking with Burnley this week. They've been down at Burnley. Good. Tim Keyes and John Nelms.
And he's brought another. I mean, as if, how many American owners does he need to speak to? He's brought one with him.
Yeah, there's been lots of rumours and stuff going around with the fans, but what we know is an American called John Neese, who owns Louisville City, who are at second-tier American club, was at the game on Saturday. I saw myself and in photos as well. And my understanding is Keyes, Nelms and Mr. Neese. And Alan Pace from Burnley was set to be there. Obviously, I wasn't there, so I assume he was there. They were playing golf all together on Monday. So it's a kind of watch this space type thing. Nobody's saying anything, but trying to find out what's going on, and we'll see what happens down the line.
So who is John Neese? Does he have lots of money?
From my understanding, he was wanting to get involved in an English football club over the past year or so.
Americans often call Scotland England, and if he's got $1 million to spend, he can call us England if he wants.
It's interesting now, because obviously we're seeing all these, we've seen Burnley and Bournemouth with Hibs. English clubs are taking a big interest in Scottish clubs now because the rules have been relaxed a little. Because it's much easier to get into Europe in Scotland because there's 12 teams in our league and five of them get a European spot.
That's always that's always the big selling point with Scottish clubs trying to get foreign investment. Because we've got an easier route to Europe. What they would say is before the summer holidays, you could just go on your holidays to Europe and be in Europe later than most Scottish
but
clubs.
But if you think how much it would cost to get an English club that's in European football and can earn the money you get from UEFA, you're talking hundreds and hundreds of millions, aren't you? And Scottish football, what is it, the 6 million that's gone into Hibs? That's probably enough.
Just take him to Old Trafford and Anfield and say one day we can be playing here, and don't. And if he thinks that's in a league game, that's his fault.
But I think there's more interest now in Scottish football on that front, and hopefully Dundee can benefit and it helps them in the long run. Because
I have to say, in fairness, to Scottish football this season in particular, it's been a decent product.
And Dundee have made good use of the loan signings that they've had as well, because in another scenario, that could be an easy, that could be low-hanging fruit for criticism if it had been a poor season, that you brought in too many players that aren't committed, they're just here short-term.
But we've seen it happen at Dens before.
And other clubs. But without going through them all, they've most of them have been a success.
Yeah,
3 wins out of 3 for Louisville City in the USL. This season? Riding high, so clearly
three
know what they're
three.
Doing. 3 for 3, yeah. They're the winningest team in the division, as they say.
And I'd just like to say that's Alan's encyclopedic knowledge. He's not Googled anything.
I tell you, what I can do is they're joint top with Detroit City FC. What former, I'm very impressed if you get this one, former Dundee United youngster, played a few games in the championship, now plays for Detroit City FC, scored his first goal at the weekend.
No.
He was an ineligible player when United got relegated. You remember that?
No.
He got points taken off him for it, I think.
No.
Or fine, anyway.
That's comparison as well. I bet that was a big story when you were on the beat as well. Just blanked
out. No, they were getting relegated.
Went to Brentford. It's your last clue.
Oh. Now, that actually, that's the first thing that's rung a bell, but not in terms of a name.
Ali Coote.
Was it really?
Young Ali Coote now plays his football.
Is that where he plays?
In Machine City. So, yeah, that's my only.
I can remember there was discord among the fans, and understandably so, that they were like that was around the time that we all twigged. We're starting to lose players before we've really seen them. You always accepted that you were going to lose good players to bigger teams and bigger leagues, but it was English clubs were starting to pluck players from youth teams, the Harry Suters, the Ali Coote, stuff like that.
The problem is during that 5 minutes when I was checking, that wasn't actually listening to what you guys were saying, so I need to fire it back to you.
I forgot already.
I'll quiz on that later.
But we should mention the young fan that got
definitely. I was flippant about it, but it's a serious issue. It could have been much, much worse.
Oh, yeah. It looked really bad.
It must have been horrific for the kid and his family.
I think his mum said it got caught in his hood, I think.
Jesus. Yeah, I think he went off near him. He put his hood up to protect himself, and a bit got caught in there or something.
Man, the actual wound and then the colour and the cauterisation
you can see how badly damaged the skin has got. It's really bad, and like things like this have been sort of. We've just been kind of waiting for things like this to happen. There was a Celtic fan recently who had to put his hair out. There was a Raith Rovers fan earlier in the season whose jacket was damaged. I'm sure there's other ones that I've not heard of. So, I mean, I know sometimes it's a bit glib to say, like, oh, you could have had somebody's eye out or something like that, but this was almost a literal case of that.
Exactly.
So it has been coming to a head, and it's also happened just before Rangers are due to play at Dens or not play at Dens again. And the last time they were there, they took it to an extreme level, really. It's the most extreme example that we've seen. And I get it. I get why people do it.
And it's still long going. I caught the start of the second half of the Celtic game at Livingston. And it looks great. And I can understand.
Yeah.
You can understand, but the people have got to realise that it's dangerous.
Especially when people are just throwing
for
them.
A reason.
People are throwing them.
Yeah.
Because it's getting to, they're holding it for a certain amount of time and then throwing it, and in some cases into crowds of people.
Yeah.
And it's thick.
Whether it was accidental or not, it's still, I mean, the whole point of having one is just...
Yeah.
And there's been enough publicity about it now that... accidental
and
isn't an excuse, because it's a dangerous thing to do, and people have to realise that.
To be fair to young Levi and his mum's I think they've done really well in terms of kind of pushing things and really talking about it and making sure that people realise what the potential danger of it is. I think they've done really well. And to be fair to Dundee, I think they've handled it really well. And
getting them up.
Keeping, absolutely. On the phone to him and getting him at the training ground on Wednesday. It was quite funny, actually, in the end, because he got to meet all his the first teamers.
Have they given him free tickets for the game wherever it may be played?
I should hope so.
I think it's really good as well, because let's not kid ourselves, like a young, you know, a young lad, that sort of stuff can put you off going to games.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know, and you know, there'll be a lot of, and likewise parents as well, thinking about whether to take their kids to games. And it's a really miserable aspect of this if you've got a portion of your fan base that might be, I mean, not, no pun intended, but might be like scarred for life with this sort of thing. You know, it's a really, and whether or not you think a grown-up conversation about safe pyro is needed, and you know, you've got people that bang the drum for that, that's a totally different conversation from this. The at this moment in time, we don't have safe pyro legalized in this country. So all that's happening now is a totally counterproductive usage of things that are fundamentally dangerous. That's a totally different argument to thinking maybe we should look at safe pyro. Two totally different discussions, and one is not helpful to the progression of the other, if that's the way that you think things should move. It's just, it's dangerous and stupid, and we are getting closer to something serious happening. I mean, you can literally... You can see the escalation in the things that Craig pointed out, that the incidents that Craig was listing there. There is an escalation to this as more and more of these things get into stadiums. And I'm no kind of, peril clutching person. I'm not like in general, but I do worry that this is only going in one direction if people don't wise up pretty sharpish.
Yeah, I know. So hopefully this is kind of watershed moment that people kind of realise that the danger of this. But it was good to hear that he very much enjoyed his day at the Gardine, and Craig got a good video of him with the manager, and the manager was, the manager was telling him, he was in his office telling him what team to pick on Saturday.
Quite nice, son. You can't.
So he may be on the bet. He might
everybody
be in the dugout.
Knows better than the manager. Everybody knows that in football, and that's not specific to Tony Docherty. Other managers are available to be told what to do.
It's fine. It's fine when kids do it, but when we ask managers a tactical question, no, they don't like that.
I know.
It's all right when an 11-year-old.
It would be great if you said, "Do you not think you got your team wrong?" And the manager's reply was, ha ha, like they do with kids. I used to get kicked out for that. But I mean, the sad thing about all these issues too is Dundee are going for the top six. They're in the top six just now. Yep. Two wins, and Hibs can do nothing about it.
Yep.
But there's a long way to go with the three games over the next week. But we've hardly had time to talk about that, but
I know.
Motherwell somewhere on Saturday, 3 points there, George.
I could do it.
They're on the cusp.
Well, if St Johnstone do them a favour, it's the road.
Do you know what? I have a sneaking suspicion for St Johnstone.
Craig Levein.
Who were a wee bit unlucky on Saturday. I'm glad they were.
Yeah. I think they were the better team overall in terms of goalkeepers. John McCracken was certainly busier than Dimitar Mitov, although Mitov made himself busy.
At least he stayed on his line.
Yeah. had a moment of madness to begin with, and Lyle Cameron took absolutely full advantage of it with a brilliant finish. Unsurprising.
Three excellent goals at McDermott Park, I thought.
Yeah. The overhead kick was spectacular.
For want of a better word, two were slightly freaky, and you don't see the long range effort of Lyle Cameron. The overhead kick was a spectacular connection with the ball. But I thought the winning goal was a great bit of great ball by McCowan and great movement from Bakayoko.
Proper striker's goal, I think. It was that's where he scores his goals. I haven't looked back at his time when he had a really good season with Bolton. He scores all his goals in between the posts, basically. And it's good to see him back on the score sheet, because I think he'd only got one since the turn of the year before that. And I think he's been a big player for Dundee this season.
I think so too. But George, thanks largely to the weather, that's all we've got time for, to speak about the actual football. Of course, there's big stuff to talk about over the road. Alan, I told you back in October that
you had to wish. Stop it. Honestly.
You know that next year I'll be going, oh no.
Honestly, it's murder. It only feels like this season's been a roller coaster, because I have to sit across from you every week.
That's what
Honestly, you're like a petulant teenager with your mood swings.
No, I'm not.
this actually feels quite mundane after the Dundee section. It was quite dramatic, wasn't it? Yeah, it's a huge, huge result at the weekend, and everything seems a little bit more rosy. I think it's safe to say it was 2024 had been a year of inconsistencies and worries and a feeling that something just wasn't quite clicking. Who knows? You know, I just couldn't quite put your finger on it. So in terms of finding the perfect moment to step up and produce a performance that the supporters needed, the players needed, the club needed, it was the perfect time. They completely outplayed Raith Rovers. It was a massively deserved victory. They snapped into tackles, they pressed, they harried, they got high up the pitch in Raith Rovers' faces and probably should have scored maybe three or four goals. Still nervous moments, it is Dundee United after mm-hmm. all. Zach Rudden hitting the bar was a big moment, but hugely merited victory. A 4-point lead now. You do need to point out that game in hand for Raith Rovers, but Raith Rovers do toil a little bit against Airdrie, so you wouldn't mm-hmm. count your chickens. Indeed, you wouldn't hugely bet on Raith Rovers, you know, picking up maximum points from three successive home games. They have failed to win as many home league games as they have won this season, so you can't take anything for granted there. So a very, very good weekend for Dundee United, and one that was timely and one that should settle nerves and also provide maybe a wee sense of perspective that although it has been an iffy few weeks, that shouldn't wipe out some terrific work that was done during the first half of the season. And that has put them in a position where they're now only, you know, 1 point behind the tally that Dundee won the league with last season. There's been several. In fact, generally, the winners will maybe get low 70s every mm-hmm. chance Dundee United get low 70s. Mm. If they do win this league, they will win it with a very, very respectable tally. Maybe even a very good tally. They could still get the highest since Rangers won this league. So it's not always been thrilling, and 2024 has been a wee bit of a grind at times for the fans. I certainly wouldn't want to, you know, dissuade them of that feeling, but maybe if they can keep the momentum going at Hampden this weekend, you're maybe kind of getting towards the final straight of what will ultimately be a satisfactory campaign for Jim Goodwin and his team.
Yeah, I mean, and you mentioned Raith's game in hand, which is it's always going to be something of a concern for United because they can close the gap. But for any team, they've got three games in 8 days coming up, Raith. That's going to be a test of their squad at this time. Just as Saturday was a test of United's squad when you look at the absences.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think any Dundee United fan that was to claim that they didn't kind of heart skip a beat when they saw that Declan Gallagher wasn't playing for the biggest game of the season, having already been without Kevin Holt, is either lying or has nerves of steel, because nobody knew what to expect from Sam McClelland. His pedigree speaks of a very capable defender. You don't play as many games as he did in League Two in England unless you can handle yourself and you're a confident boy. But he hadn't played 90 minutes since September the 23rd. So that he could have been forgiven for rustiness.
Had it been Holt or Gallagher coming in after that length of absence from first team football, you'd have been a bit worried in such a big game.
But he was terrific, didn't put a foot wrong. He was fundamentally just a keep it simple philosophy. You know, didn't do anything silly, won his headers, played out and alongside Ross Graham. I think I gave man of the match to Louis Moult because he was absolutely unplayable, particularly in that first half. Just dominated everything. However, maybe in hindsight, I do fight, you know what it's like. You give man of the match on the whistle and then maybe a couple of days later you think, was he man of the match?
it's always hard to give man of the match to a defender in a winning team.
Exactly. And that was kind of playing in my mind. But as I think back on it, the more I think maybe it was actually Ross Graham, because he was so aggressive and proactive, came out from the back, he was really vocal. He took the leadership role in that partnership with up beside McClelland, and I was really happy for him, because fundamentally, as we discussed at the time, it was an impossible decision when Gallagher came back. You know, do you keep Ross Graham in the team, or do you bring back Declan mm-hmm. Gallagher, Scotland international? There was no perfect outcome. So while Ross Graham didn't deserve to get dropped, and I felt so sorry for him, I don't know if I would have done any different as a manager. It was such a mm-hmm. tough call. Mm-hmm. However, now that he's back in the team, he will stay in the team for the rest of the season. I don't think Kevin Holt will be risked. And I'm looking forward to seeing how he kicks on, because he's absolutely earned this run in the team. And judging by how he played at the weekend, he looks ready to absolutely grab it and not give up this jersey this time.
And to embrace the leading role in the partnership says a lot about his character, doesn't it?
I think so. He is a very mature young man. You speak to Ross and he carries himself with a maturity beyond his years. You know, he's from a, you know, from a good family and things, and he's a sensible laddie, and he gets it as well. You know, he's from a sporting family as well. His extended family includes Conor Graham, the golfer, who's an absolute hotshot of
something else.
And you know, he's played in the Junior Ryder Cup, and I think he's going to be a big deal. And it's a very sporting family, and he just gets it. Very level-headed, realises the importance of you know, what Dundee United are. He's a Blair Gowrie boy, so he's local enough. So I think he's someone that has had to be patient this season and now looks ready to kind of, you know, take out that frustration, if you like, during the run-in. And also, I think he'll come in a more complete defender, because you could visibly see him learning on the job on how to be a right-sided centre-half in a four, because he'd only ever played as a left-sided centre-back mm-hmm. in a three, and it's a completely different planet as how to play as a centre-back. So he's now coming into a position that he's more comfortable on his left side, but with that additional development and adaptation of how to do a slightly different role, and that'll only make him a more complete defender and be able to deal with different situations. So I could see him having a right good run in, I have to say. I'll call that now. Hopefully I don't jinx the lad, but I think he could have a right good run in and play a big part. And, you know, as with several players that are playing for this, maybe get himself a new contract. I suspect he will.
And credit to the only slightly older McClelland, because he's on loan, and the loan's not gone to plan so far. I mean, for want of a better phrase, lad, he could have been in the huff and nowhere near ready to play, but he obviously has kept himself focused in training and was ready to play.
Absolutely, yeah. He's quite a professional young man, and I think that experience in England's League Two will have definitely matured him and steeled him for these situations. And I didn't really doubt his ability. His career is what his career is. Chelsea Academy has proved that he can play senior football as well, youth internationalist. So his quality was always there. It's just his durability you are wondering about, having come back from such a serious injury. And he answered that question absolutely no bother.
I can't credit him enough, because, I mean, one of the things about loans, it's part of a learning process. And sometimes guys have to learn that you need to be ready all the time. I mean, you could forgive that boy for thinking, and he maybe was, probably was, in fact, thinking, I'm just biding my time here. But at least he's gone and made sure he's worked hard every day, Monday to Friday. And I mean, there's a lot of players who wouldn't do that.
Yeah, he seems a very professional young man, absolutely. He's speaking to him after the game. He made it clear that every it's a job, fundamentally. You go into training every day to be the best player in the pitch and in training, and that's the way he's approached it. And it's maybe easy for him to say after that game, only he'll know if it's absolutely true in his heart, but he sounded like a man who thought that his chance would come before the end of the season, one way or the other, and I think it probably has. Declan Gallagher will find out the extent of his injury today when we've got to speak to Jim, but if Declan does face a wee layoff, or even if it's just a case of he needs a bit of rest and it, you know, might be better to just sit him out a wee bit, they now can without a great deal of fear. I'd have McClelland and Graham as my partnership until such a time as they play themselves out of the team, because you know you're in the running now, you're in the final straight. Just, you know, keep a winning team and, you know, try and kick on. And if that helps Declan Gallagher get a bit of concerted rest so that he's, say, potentially ready for next season,
yeah,
more success.
I mean, hopefully it's good news about Declan Gallagher, but this has bothered him for a while now. And there's that situation where even if the specialist says, well, if you feel okay, play, you would think over the next couple of months at least, or next month or so at least, because that's all that's left, it could still be an issue for him. So like you say, it's maybe smart thinking by Jim Goodwin if he sticks with the two younger ones because they're fully fit. Somebody say yes to
it. Yeah, I'd say so. I think to come in such a big game, to add to what's been said already, I think to come in such a big game and... it was a bit of a, I don't mean this disrespectfully, but a bit of a ragtag defence as well, because it's a sort of young, inexperienced right back to the side of McClelland. And McMahon was a doubt going into the game and had missed matches previously. So for that back four to come out with a clean sheet is excellent. And I think Raith approached the match to try and take full advantage of that as quickly as possible, because they came flying out the traps. They had two good chances early on. It was quite an attacking lineup. Dundee United have conceded the first goal quite a lot in matches recently. So yeah, I think
eight of the previous 12 prior to.
So yeah, so Ian Murray's clearly thought we'll go at them right from the start and try and take advantage of that. They almost did, but then. I mean, United still score very, very early in the game. And I think it's possible that what Ian Murray's tried to do is maybe worked against them there, because, I mean, I don't know whether Keith Watson was maybe not fit enough to start the game. But either way, Scott Brown starts in defence. And they tried it in the first game at Starks Park with less success, but Moult was constantly going on to Scott Brown to try and win headers, and that's ultimately where the first goal comes from. But it was absolutely fantastic work from Tony Watt. I mean, I know it's one of those goals that's both a really poor one to concede from Raith because it's just route one, but the flick on and the touch and one touch, two touch, and it's in the net was just fantastic.
It's a far better goal than I give credit for. It's an absolutely fabulous goal technically. To do that while running.
Exactly. And that's just, it all happens so quickly. Yeah. And it's been all told, even though they've both had points in the season where they've maybe struggled a little bit. I mean, seems a bit harsh to say about Louis Moult. I mean, he had an 8-game stretch where he didn't score a goal. That was about it. But he's been fantastic. He's been prolific either side of that. But all told, they've been very good this season, the two of them.
It's a right good point on the age. I'm just checking that. I mean, that's, take away Scott McMahon, that's a back four of 19, 22 and 23. And
goalkeeper's not the oldest either.
No, I think mid-20s for Jack. So.
Well, I was going to mention the goalkeeper, actually, because he's often not mentioned, but especially when you've injuries hit, it's good to have such a steady presence behind a back four as he's been this season, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And he made a big save early doors, first couple of minutes against Raith Rovers. You're right. He's had a kind of understated season where he doesn't have to make a lot of saves, but he does that kind of one big save a game thing exceptionally well. I remember, I don't know why, but this interview stands out where I remember Andy Gorham talking about moving from Hibs to Rangers. He said he had to learn how to be a completely different type of goalkeeper. Yeah. The mentality was totally different, because whereas at Hibs you got credit for making seven saves and a 2-1 defeat, at Rangers you had to make one big save a game, and it's a wee bit akin to that. Jack Walton,
when you're busy, concentration's automatic.
Yeah, exactly. That's it. Jack Walton doesn't have to make a lot of saves, but Jack Walton has to be aware to make big save, maybe one big save a game, And he invariably does that. He's been a very, very astute signing from Dundee United. And after the travails of last season and the two, you know, Carl Johan Eriksson and Mark Birigiti, quite aside from their mistakes that they made, maybe Carl Johan didn't make quite as many kind of massive errors as Mark did, but you would say neither of them imbued you with confidence. You know, you didn't watch them and think, well, there's a calming influence that I can relax while watching. Mm-hmm. And Jack Walton is, just steady Eddie, and you never worry about him when he's between the sticks. Mm-hmm. And after last season, that's quite a nice feeling.
Do you think Wraith's approach helped United a wee bit? Just to what Craig was saying there, and I noticed that Sean Byrne wasn't playing. Mm-hmm. Found that a little bit surprising, but we've seen a lot this season that United struggle a wee bit when teams just sit in and don't come out.
Teams that frustrated them, yeah, exactly. So, I mean, but Wraith have got the attacking talent to. I can see why he's made that approach, but at the same time, I know.
Hindsight and all that. But.
Dunfermline went there and got a draw from defending the whole time. And there's been other teams that have sat in and taken the lead or frustrated Dundee United in the first half this season. It's definitely. It's not a decision I would want to have to make anyway, but I can see why he's done it with the attacking talent he had. Some of the Wraith fans were maybe not disappointed with the approach, more the team selection. I think some wanted Hamilton to start instead of Ruddon, which it's easy to say in hindsight, but I think the big thing was I think people wanted either Brown or Byrne playing instead of Turner in the centre midfield.
I think it's always hard to crucify managers for a starting lineup, and if Wraith Rovers score one of those two chances in the first 3 minutes, then that direct attacking approach has paid dividends. But I think where you could criticise Ian Murray is not changing it quickly enough, because it became quite apparent that United were gobbling up everything that was coming into the final third and were coming back on Wraith Rovers all the time. And at that point, Kyle Turner was a passenger. Sam Stanton isn't a natural destroying midfielder. They were getting swamped. At that point, you maybe have to bite the bullet and go, we need an extra body in there to try and just stop Dundee United from pushing up on you. Everyone's easier. And, you know, everyone can point out in hindsight. I'm always loath to criticise managers that know so much more about this than me. But you could see the way the game was flowing, and I was surprised that they didn't beef up the midfield, because Sybold and Doherty, with Watt just dropping in and occasionally creating an overload, were just absolutely tearing it up in there.
I have to say as well, something that I'm not going to make any rash predictions, but what I do like about United's closing fixtures is the fact that every team they're playing can see a big benefit from picking up 3 points from any game just now. Whether it's to avoid relegation or to get in the promotion playoffs. And for me, the more open the game, the more I fancy Dundee United in this league. And I think that the fact that they're playing teams who will, to some extent, have a go at them and not just try to shut up shop.
Yeah, I saw that last season with Dunfermline. They had, there's a lot of similarities, I'm sure I've pointed out before, but they faced a lot of teams that would come in and even when Edinburgh came, and I'm sure they had the chance to go top or something, and they sat in 10 men behind the ball the entire game, and Dunfermline won with a 89th minute own goal from Liam Fontaine, ex-Dundee's Liam Fontaine. And then at the end of the season, Queen of the South came and attacked because they still had the chance to get into the playoffs, and Dunfermline beat them 5-0. So yeah, that kind of thing can
happen. That's a good day compared to these days.
Kevin Dubrovsky was in goals as well.
It is something. And the way it's been since the turn of the year, these roller coaster fans like me, sometimes you forget the positives, and also the former football writer in me, you love a striker that gets 20 goals. It's a great story for us. But as a manager, you'll take a pair that have got 30 goals, which is where Moulton Watt are now.
Yeah, and especially since it's always been a conundrum for Jim Goodwin. Like all season, I would suggest that
both these men would like to be the number nine who is leading the line mm-hmm. and converting the chances in the box. However, that's not always been able to be the case. And Jim Goodwin, for the most part, has found a solution that's crafted a winning team that gets goal contributions from both Tony Watt and Louis Moult, which is an excellent state of affairs, because you might think that's easy. It's not always that easy, because it's in modern football, you kind of just have two players up the pitch. You know, you need to find a way to make that work as part of a unit. And they've done that really well. As I say, I thought Louis Moult was sensational mm-hmm. against Raith Rovers. He just won everything in the air, held everything up. Has headed assist for Tony Watt's goal. That's a beautiful, deft, mm-hmm. flicked header that, you know, he has to first of all physically win the header and then to direct it into his path. It's as good as any through ball. He was back to his best. And to be fair, Louis's not had many bad games.
No, but just had that stretch where he didn't score. Yeah, that was it.
And the problem he's got, and you know, not to pat him in the back too much, but the problem is his ceiling is so high mm-hmm. that a little bit like Tony Watt, who gets a lot of criticism, I think there's a level of expectation on them that maybe isn't on other players. And that will be there because Louis Moult is that good.
Yeah, I was going to say, sometimes Louis Moult is a good striker, but other times he bosses a game, I think, like no other player in the Championship can. And that's what he's judged on.
This is a player who not long ago was arguably the best number nine form-wise in the Scottish Premiership. Mm-hmm. So, yes, he is expected to tear up the Championship. And on occasion, you see flashes of the player that you go, you'd have him in the Premiership. Yeah. You know, and I think if he wants it, he will get that crack at the Premiership, because he's proved his durability, he's proved his value, and 30 goals for him and Tony is good. But speaking to Jim earlier in the week, Jim Goodman earlier in the week, and he, you know, the emphasis very much was there are a lot more goals in the next five games, and mm-hmm. so finish it in prolific fashion and get that tally up even more.
Well, ignoring the fact that it was at 0-0 at Hampden last time, it was certainly a draw. You think United will look forward to going to the wide open spaces of Hampden.
They've been decent though, haven't they?
They've definitely had an upturn under Callum, that's for sure. It's slowed down a wee bit compared to, you know, the way he burst from the gates, but they look a capable outfit. And what I will say is, I get that there's this feeling that you saw United go gung-ho and attacking, and it was the sort of football United fans want to see. I will say there is always two teams trying to play a game of football, and mm-hmm. the way Raith Rovers set up, it played into United's hands in that regard a little bit. I wouldn't be shocked if it is a different sort of lineup. You can't play the same game against two embanked banks of four. It's just, you know, well, in fact, it would be more than that. You're effectively caught often against two banks of five. So I would... there might be a bit more patience required, but I would still like to see this. If it's the same aggression, same intensity, same quality of deliveries into the box, then I think they should hopefully have enough. But I don't think it will be quite the same harem scarem style of match, just purely because you can't exploit spaces that don't exist. You have to craft them. So I think it might not quite be as thrilling as the Rovers game, but if they can just get the first goal, that's going to be the key in all their matches. I think they've won like 90% of the games that they've scored the first goal in. Teams don't know how to handle Dundee United when Dundee United are ahead, because they are so dangerous if you go at them and mm-hmm. leave spaces. So it's all about that first goal. Get that anyway.
I must admit, I do like the thought of United, especially since you're giving them the first goal. A good pitch, a big pitch. I like the thought of United over 90 minutes. Hopefully they do as well. And I do absolutely accept and expect Queen's Park to be a challenge. But I think I think playing at Hampden's a big positive for United.
Yeah. I'm still... if I seem a little bit morose about the prospect, it's because I just remember that previous game at Hampden.
Yes.
There's been worse...
That is the flaw in my argument.
There's been worse performances this season. There's been defeats. I don't think there's been a worse game I've covered
It was just a harrowing watch.
My worst game of the season was also at Hampden.
the home of Scottish football.
Exactly, covering, I think it was Dunfermline, but I was also
so
there
was Scotland's
for...
Scotland's falling enough.
I was also there for Wraith's incredible comeback, which is one of the most astonishing things I've ever seen in the flesh. Yeah. So
it's a very different Queen's Park. I mean, that Hampden game, it was about... I mean, I think that night, if Queen's Park had lost 1-0, they would have still... looked on it as a positive.
I don't even remember the name of their manager at that time.
It was Knighton or something like that. Paul Knighton.
He'd gone. Yeah. So it was
that's what I'm saying. Paul Knighton or something like that. It was N-U-J-T-E-N or something along those lines. I can't remember how it was pronounced.
It was a very odd game. Yeah, Queen's Park were in transition and just very, very, very defensive. Mm. Just it was a bad game of football. So on the bright side, they're surely due one. They can't be that bad again. So you wouldn't think.
I mean, it's funny, once you get a better manager and better form, it can actually sometimes work in your favour. That you think, well, at least it gives us a chance because they're gonna come out and play.
You would expect them to be more ambitious. I do get that aspect of it. And, you know, I don't expect them to push for the playoffs, but they know that if they are to... have any sort of miracle late push for that regard, then they need to win games. And if they were to get a couple of big wins, then, you know, stranger things have happened. So, but I suspect they would be happy with a point. So I think patience might be required for United.
And going back to last Saturday, sadly, we have to touch on the uglier side of the game again. I mean, things get thrown still, but somebody threw a bottle and which United and Wraith both reacted swiftly to deal with it, but it's depressing, isn't it?
Yeah, just an astonishing level of idiocy, particularly with the glass bottle. Mm. Like, I don't think I've ever been sufficiently angry at a football match to do something like that, which, as well as being incredibly dangerous to if you were to strike someone who, that you're aiming for, ruin your own life. What, you want a criminal record? And it's absolutely wild, incredibly stupid, and absolute kudos to Wraith Rovers for reacting so swiftly. They had a statement out within 20 less than 24 hours.
Yeah.
And they will be acutely aware that for all their, you know, they've been the sort of cheeky scamps of the division. They've done a lot of really great stuff in terms of building their fan engagement and being a more interesting...
They've dragged them, club, without going into too much detail, but in the last year or two, they've dragged them, their club, from a self-made mess and low position in terms of regard up to being well-liked.
Absolutely. And they've moved to ensure that no, you know, long... running damage is done just due to the actions of a couple of mindless fools, and I'm reluctant to kind of put the boot into, you know, the Rovers fans too much, because they've been great this season in terms of following their team, and
it should not be a reflection on their support.
Can you imagine if every fan base is judged by the reflection of their worst followers? It's not the way it should be.
Yeah, it's not a club specific thing. Exactly. It's the same with the pyro and all of this stuff is not club specific. You'll find idiots in every well supported team that do this kind of thing.
Yeah,
it's just a shame. Both these kind of overshadow two massive games on our patch, and both games have
massive positives otherwise. Yeah. But thankfully, there are things, and finally, there are things in life you can rely on. Dave Bowman's got another big band. It's like an old friend coming to visit, isn't it? Bowman band. You're like, all's not bad in the world.
I feel a bit sorry for Dave. Yeah, the story is obviously he's got a four-match SFA ban after getting sent off the recent Airdrie game. He served the first of those four games and there's a further four games suspended. So if he was to breach the same rule, which is not out with the realms of possibility before the end of the 2025.
I don't think many bookies are taking bets.
Then that four games would automatically kick in.
The end of next season?
before the end of next season.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah, so he's got to be on his best behaviour for quite a long period. And Jim Goodwin said that he felt it was a little bit excessive, which I can understand and also can't understand in this regard that it's his third red card of the season. On a pure accumulation basis, he's probably lucky to only get four games immediately for that. When you're looking at a cumulative totting up
frustration
process.
Is this was a technical breach.
Yes, really, exactly. It? However, the frustration would be whether it should have been a red card in the first place. By the absolute letter of the law, the officials probably got it right. I understand that, although it's not been made public, I understand the issue was a water bottle was kicked and it entered the field of play. I don't think it was booted onto the pitch. I think it was booted kind of along the touchline and it's veered onto the field of play. And it was right as Airdrie scored their second goal. So it was just an act of frustration. It wasn't aimed at anyone. It wasn't foul and abusive. It wasn't dangerous. It was a technical breach of the playing area. And whether in the circumstances the referee could have booked the culprit, I would suggest maybe so. Just a wee bit of common sense in the circumstances, I don't think would have gone amiss, because this wasn't him with a foul mouth at an official, which you could say that's a red card. You can't do that.
I thought the rule was that the manager just got booked. Whatever.
I think they did that for a season. Was or that something. Changed? Yeah, I think they
do keep up, John.
Well, I'll try.
No, but that was a thing. That was a thing for a while. I'm not entirely sure what happened with it, but
I thought that was still the case.
It might have been a season they did it for or something like that.
If Jim Goodwin had to take the blame every time Dave Bowman did something wrong, I'm not sure Dave would still be in the
or
dugout.
Maybe if there's no obvious culprit and nobody's taken...
That rings a bell.
Or something like that. I can't remember exactly.
But I think... I feel a wee bit sorry for Dave, because we can make light of this, and there is Stewie's pedigree and stuff, and he'll have a bit of a joke about this, but it's no. I don't think he likes the feeling of being banned and being ridiculed and being sent to the stand. And I think on this occasion, whether it merited a red card, I'm not entirely sure. But nevertheless, as long as he's good in the future, then it's only another three games. So he'll be back before the end of the season, and the dugout will be a noisier place for it for the final two games of the season.
And for those who say it's typical Bowman that it was a misguided pass, I would just retell a story of.
Well, saying you don't have to go up and speak to him.
I arrived at a game at Cowdenbeath many years ago, and he was warming up on the pitch, and he shouted on me, and he fired the ball at me from 40 yards, and I was just in the middle of saying, like, you're going to hit me from. Oh! And he hit me right in the chest, and it was incredibly sore. So. When he takes aim, he usually hits the target. That's all I'll say about Bo.
If you like the podcast, we'd be grateful if you tell your pals about it. Or even better, leave a review or a simple rating on iTunes or wherever you find your podcasts. All that really helps people find Twa Teams One Street, and that means a lot to us. Don't forget to pick up your copy of The Tilly Monday to Saturday for all the latest from Dens and Tannadice.